This is The Recency Bias. Welcome to your morning after mini-pod. I'm Zach Vanas. Recency Bias, a production, of course, of The Big Pod. The Montreal Bias. From rabbithabs.com. Here with you for a true morning after mini-pod, because Monday night's game in Vancouver against the Canucks went real late. 10 o'clock Eastern time start, not even the latest that we're going to get this week. For game number 24 on the season for your Montreal Canadiens, to say at the Canucks, and a very disappointing outcome in a game that the Canadiens were the better team the entire time. Played the better game until overtime in the shootout, that is. Through regulation, once again, the Canadiens looked really good. In overtime, the Canadiens looked like a disaster, but we will get to that. It was a 2-1 shootout loss. One that very much should have been a win, unfortunately. And that's just disappointing, because the entire 58 minutes before Vancouver tied it up with the Thatcher Demko pulled in the late going, this felt like a right-earned proper Canadiens win that was maybe going to be a shutout for Carey Price, who was very good in this game. He's getting the start against Demko. A great night for Carey Price. Some huge saves. He was 28 for 29 on the night, 966. Looked a lot like himself for the most part. Was crucial in helping the penalty kill go 3 for 3, including some 5-on-3s, but we'll get into all that. Starting thoughts on Monday night, late Monday night. Want to see what the Deneau line would get up to again. Who put up 8 points against the Jets. And the Canucks, they've been rolling recently. A team that had come off 2 wins versus Toronto. But it didn't look like that early. The Vancouver Canucks, and if you're watching the RDS broadcast like I was, very much pointing out, wow, this is not the team that just beat the top team in the division twice in a row. This team is struggling to put anything together. And that was an accurate description of what was happening. Some real chances in the early going. A Tyler Toffoli scoring chance 3.5 minutes into the game. Didn't turn into a goal, but it did turn into a power play for the Habs. And once again, the Montreal Canadiens power play used to be a negative in the Claude Julien days. Has become a real positive for the Habs as of late. Guess who? You knew it. Petrie for Norris. Thanks to a Corey Perry screen. Petrie with a beauty shot, his 9th of the season. A power play that was set up quite nicely by young Jesperi Kotkaniemi. His unit, the second unit of the power play, the one that doesn't include Shea Weber, has become evidently the much more dangerous of the two waves of the power play. And at some point, you got to wonder if it becomes the first wave, because it's not night and day between the two. I think there's the first unit has made strides as well, but that second unit been very effective as of late, scoring, I think, all of the power play goals that the Habs have got in the Dom Ducharme era. So the Habs were up 1-0, and with 3 minutes left, Corey Perry took what was kind of a questionable power play penalty. And then on that penalty kill, Paul Byron going at Thatcher Demko, trying to take the puck to the net, runs into Demko. I know some Habs fans were upset that Byron got called for goalie interference on the way he ran into Demko. That's a good call, I'm afraid. That's just a good call. That's the right call. He gets called for interference. It's a minute 20 of 5-on-3, and the Habs did a very effective job of killing it. Coming out of the first 20 minutes, power play worked. The penalty kill was effective. Suddenly, the special teams are a net positive for the Canadiens. What you saying, Kirk Muller? Well, the Habs were outshot 10-7 in the frame. They were clearly the better team throughout. The 5-on-3 certainly led to the disparity in shots going in Vancouver's favor. But as far as high danger chances, scoring chances, all that, very much in the Canadiens' favor. And that would continue in the second period, a period in which they dominate, had twice as much time in Vancouver's offensive zone as Vancouver did in Montreal's zone. And yet, there would be nothing to show for it. 3 minutes into that one, Perry created an incredible chance for Toffoli. Puck goes up, comes down, and no, not quite. Not quite the Toffoli's revenge continuing against Vancouver. Not quite the 2-0 lead that would have been very nice for the Habs. Corey Perry, what a revelation's the wrong word, because this guy's had a long career. He's won Hart trophies. We all know what he can do. But at his age, I wasn't sure there was much left in the tank. You saw the Habs pretty much got him on a flyer. He wasn't really even expected to be a crucial part of this team the way the season started. But Perry has become a very big factor for your Montreal Canadiens. Well, very big factor. He's become a nice contributor, I should say. And it's all because of the hands. He might not have the speed anymore. But my gosh, does Corey Perry still have the hands? Still got the poise with the puck. You know, I saw somebody had tweeted on Monday night, and I think this is apt. It's a little bit reminiscent of when, a parent is playing keep away with their kid, and they're not really moving quickly, holding the puck away from the kid who's trying to chase it down. But there's no way the kid's going to get the puck, and that's what it looks like with Corey Perry. He's just, the puck's on a string off his stick. And yes, he doesn't have the explosiveness and the speed that he used to have, which, you know, is why he's a fourth liner now and not a Hart Trophy candidate anymore at 36 years old or whatever he is. But the hands are still there, and the decision-making and that net front presence, he's been a nice contributor to the Habs, this season. And it kept going. There was a flurry of activity for the Habs. They had Vancouver completely penned in. But as my notes say here, after that flurry of activity, it's still only 1-0. And that was really the issue. You had Armia with an opportunity on a breakaway. Demko says no. The Habs did get a power play late. Weren't able to put much. Price made some nice saves when Vancouver did have opportunities in that second period. But after 40 minutes, Canadians definitely looked like the better team, and it was just seemed like a matter of time before they got one goal, put that thing away. They outshot the Canucks 12-6 in that middle frame. And in the early parts of the third period, it remained the Canadiens game. Both teams had chances, but the Canadiens certainly looked like the team that were putting things together in a way that the coach was going to be much happier with. Then Suzuki got a tripping penalty about midway through the period. Uh-oh. Once again, though, penalty kill, did a decent job, and Carey Price came up with some huge saves, including a massive save on Brock Besser. But you knew things were sliding into dangerous territory when the Canadiens found themselves icing the puck a lot in late in the third period. Many, many times. I didn't count, but had to be 5 or 6 at least. Canadiens dumping the puck. Icing, comes back, reset, do it again. And you started to feel like they were getting hemmed in. But Carey was solid. Canadiens pushed it back. And with less than 2 minutes to go, and Thatcher Demko trying to get out of his net so that the Vancouver Canucks could put on an extra attacker, he only gets about midway to the bench, and the Vancouver Canucks suddenly have 6 players on the ice, plus a goalie. That's what I call too many men. However, it is not what the referees decided to call too many men. No call. Habs, you could hear the bench, because, you know, you can hear in those buildings pretty easy these days. You could hear the Habs all calling for, whoa, look, there's 6 of them out there. That's very kind of you to let them get set up. And, of course, next thing you know, Ben Chiarot completely forgets what the hell he's supposed to be doing. Leaves one side of the ice completely open. That'd be your job, Ben. Get over there. That's your territory to cover. Nope. Gaudette with a great shot. Beats Price pinging in. And we're even with 40.5 seconds left. It's 1-1. And any Habs fan this year knows, uh-oh, not overtime. Canadiens 0-6 when heading into extra time this season going into this one. And well, you already know the result. It wasn't going to go their way once again. Dano, Kotkaniemi, Jeff Petrie out to start.
I thought that was, you know, okay, that's what I want to see. For the moment, I guess. Dunno. And then things just fell apart from there. Dunno apparently had no intention of getting off the ice, because he's the guy you want out there. Zero goals, Dunno. That's our crucial player out there in overtime. So he's just out there for, I don't know, like 2 minutes almost. Everyone else changes. Then we had all forwards. Drouin, Suzuki, Anderson were out there at one point. Gallagher, Tatar, Anderson out there at one point. The only defenseman who saw the ice in overtime was Jeff Petrie. And frankly, I mean, I'd be okay with Romanov being out there as well. I would encourage Romanov being out there as well. But that's the way it should be. Nobody beyond Petrie and Romanov. And so that's what you saw on Monday night. But they haven't had much time to figure out what to do with those units out there. That was obvious. More interested, more concerned with how to turn the line over than, you know, maybe try and score. One would think it was a lot of waiting around, a lot of waiting to get the right combo of guys out there, but I'm not sure what the right combo was supposed to do once it was on the ice, because it didn't do shit. The only Hab who really showed up in overtime was Carey Price, who just had an amazing glove save on Brock Besser. Just ridiculous, robbed him, coming back, putting the glove down. Enough so that the Vancouver Canucks were forced to use the shootout to win. One, beat Price, the final shooter, while Suzuki, Drouin, and Tatar were not able to beat Thatcher Demko. Suzuki, fine. Drouin actually just missed. He had Demko beat. And he just missed on finishing off the play. Maybe getting a little close, but all the same, had he been able to finish his move, that was a goal. And Tatar, just watch it for yourself. I can't really describe what Tatar tried to do, but he looked like he tried to do something that's outside his wheelhouse. Reminds me of myself when I've been in a ball hockey or something and go to the shootout. And find yourself, I don't know what I'm going to do. Something I can't. That's going to be my best move. Those are two moves in my wheelhouse. Shoot early and hope. Or try a move you've never tried before. And are incapable of pulling off. And that's what it looked like Tatar tried to do. What a sad end to that attempt. And what a sad end to a game. I think the Canadiens absolutely deserved the win. Carey Price deserved the win. Carey has looked good now in two consecutive starts with save percentages north of 950. The Burke effect already happening? I encourage you, if you have a subscription to The Athletic, to read the piece by Arpan Basu on Sean Burke and what he brought to goalies he's coached in the past, particularly large goalies, a la Carey Price, what he did for their careers, guys like Devin Dubnyk. I believe Ilya Bryzgalov was in that interview. I forget who the third goalie was, but really interesting to get a sense of how he coaches. And it's quite different, I think, from what Stefan Waite was asking of Carey Price. One particular quote I really liked in there was that Berkey, because obviously hockey people are very good at coming up with nicknames, so Sean Burke, they've nicknamed Berkey, if you can believe it. Berkey, his approach is, I don't like hearing the goalie had no chance on that. If you're well positioned, as you should be, and if you're particularly a big body goalie who, you know, should be able to cover most angles, there should never be such thing as you had no chance. You may put yourself in a position to have no chance. Perhaps your team has put you in a position to have no chance, but there's no such thing really as a goalie having no chance. And I like that approach. I think that used to be how we all mentally approached Carey Price, and that was, he was just, he's so well positioned, plays technically the position so well that he had a chance most of the time. And you know, when you hear Stefan Waite's interviews, which were putting a lot of blame on the Canadiens' defense, rightfully, probably, but it's just all about the approach. And if the approach is, well, what can we do, Carey? Your defense sucks. Sorry, bud. Versus, hey, doesn't matter what the defense is doing, you should still be able to position to make the save. I like that new approach. Maybe it's a coincidence, but Price, under the tutelage, the Zoom tutelage, still to this point from Schomburg, has looked better. He looked really, really, really good on Monday night. Unfortunately, Just didn't happen for the Canadians. Okay, if you want to point to what was the issue in the first 60 minutes, lack of finish. I mean, they could have kept some of that finish from the 7 goals they put up against Winnipeg to get one more, and they had chances, particularly Tyler Toffoli, but no dice. Jeff Petrie with the only goal, the power play goal, his 9th of the season. Prorated for an 82-game season, or what's the reverse of prorated? In an 82-game season, Jeff Petrie would be on pace for 30 goals, and that's insane. Assist on the one goal by Kotkaniemi and Tatar. Although Perry should have got an assist. He really helped make that thing happen with his screen. Time on ice. Just taking a look at the centers because I was wondering if there's been any shift considering Kotkaniemi, who had another very good game on Monday. Although Twitter was like really obsessed with Kotkaniemi on Monday. He was having a very good game. But even though in my last episode I was defending Kotkaniemi against my father's disappointment in what the kids brought so far, you know, let's find a middle ground here with Kotkaniemi. I think he had a really, really effective game. I'm not trying to take anything from Monday night, but you would swear he scored a hattie and was delivering the victory all on his own. And that wasn't the case either. Works that we want good things from Kotkaniemi. So when he has a good night like he did on Monday, there's a tendency to really get behind it. But yeah, he had an assist. But his time on ice remains third most of the three forwards. Suzuki once again leading the way, 20 minutes, 30 seconds. Deneau, 18:44. His play's picked up since Duchamp has been around. And Kotkaniemi, 16 minutes, 28 seconds. So a couple minutes less. Really, it's Suzuki whose time on ice remains the most nights. He remains the leading forward in terms of time on ice. Certainly the center with the most time on ice, but he hasn't been himself lately. I'm not sure what's up there. He's certainly not the kid we saw in the first 15 games of the season, where he was a world beater. You saw on nearly every time he was out there something special. You saw his ability to see the game at what looked like a quicker rate than almost everybody else. He was doing not just the right thing, but the next level thing. I mean, I was effusive in my praise of Suzuki through the first portion of the season. I still love the kid, but from the first 15 games and then 5 games after that, it had dropped off a little bit. But this last week or so plus, Suzuki just not standing out at really at all. And I don't know what that is. I don't know. I doubt it's that his creativity is being tampered, because the sense I get is Duchamp has encouraged more of that, which is why you probably see players like Drouin and Kotkaniemi shining a little bit. But I don't know. Suzuki is just fun to watch. I'm going to be watching Suzuki all the time anyway. But his play falling off a little. I can't quite put my finger on why that is. Maybe he's nursing an injury. Hard to say. Maybe it's just one of those ebbs and flows. So that's it. That'll do us. Canadians right back at it on Wednesday. A late one. Wednesday and Thursday. Lots of hockey this week. Saturday as well. Lots of late hockey this week. To quote young William in Almost Famous about Wednesday night start. 11? 11? That's an 8 o'clock start in Vancouver. That's not even a normal time start on the West Coast. Last night's game finished just before 1 a.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be just before 2 if it goes to OT on Wednesday. Disgusting. That will once again be another morning after mini pod in its true form. I am not staying up to do that one after. I don't even know if I'll watch that whole thing. I probably will. Until a tired Thursday. Take care.